You know, it is a roller coaster. I'm not telling you it's been easy. There's been days where I wanted to quit. There's been days where I cried. There's been days where I thought I was going to relapse. There's been days where I've, you know, gone to the gym and just let all the anger out. But I'm here, I'm alive, and I'm showing the people the ways of how to live a better life with addictions and mental health.
That's Angus Wood, a 25-year-old knockabout bloke from Melbourne who not too long ago didn't think he'd still be here at all, let alone creating the positive change he is now. Gus has struggled intensely with his mental health since his late teens, going down a dark path of drug and gambling addiction. And by the age of 23, it was either going to be the end or a new beginning. Thankfully, everything started to change when Gus sent a text to a mate asking for help. And now, nearly 2 years sober, Gus is running his own mental health movement, the Lost and Found Project, and sharing his story to show others that a better life is possible if you make it happen. Welcome to Young Blood, the award-winning volunteer podcast dedicated to young men's mental health. My name's Callum McPherson, I'm a journalist, and this is a platform for everyday men to share lived experience stories and show that no matter what you're going through, you're not alone. Suicide is the number one killer of young people, and changing that starts with speaking up. So let's do it.
Trigger warning, if you find anything spoken about in today's episode distressing, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14.
The Young Blood Men's Mental Health Podcast is a volunteer community service, and we rely on community support to bring this show to you. This episode is sponsored by Ski for Life, a charity committed to promoting well-being and suicide prevention. They've been running their annual ski relay on South Australia's Murray River for more than a decade, raising money to support community mental health initiatives. You can find out more about their cause at skiforlife.com.au.
Gus, you didn't have a great time in high school. Can you tell us a bit about those years?
Yeah, so high school was a struggle for me. Year 7 to 10, I really struggled to fit in. I was a really shy, nervous kid, and I got severely bullied in year 7 and 8 by this one particular person. And it just broke me because at the time I didn't understand why I was getting bullied. And the feelings, this was going on for 2 years.
Was it physical abuse?
It was verbal. Verbal, and one time it was physical, but 95% of it was all verbal, all over social.
Scaring you?
Yeah.
And like cyberbullying as well?
Yeah, exactly right. He was a bigger man than me, or kid at the time. As I said, I was really little and shy, and I couldn't fight back. Even physically, I didn't want to do that because it's not the way. That's what I got brought up. And verbally, it's not going to fix anything. And he put me in a dark place for 2 years, and I was scared. I was an emotional wreck. I was intimidated going to school. Like, no kid should ever have to feel that at 13 years of age, feeling scared to go to school. And yeah, I was getting on the bus, and I was thinking of ending my life. I was depressed, and it led to anxiety. And then I had to leave schools from there, from the year 7 to 8 bracket. And then year 9 and 10, I got bullied in a social setting as well. And that was really tough to deal with as well, because...
And was this based on your appearance, or you being a less confident, sort of smaller kid, or...?
Yeah, I think it was definitely based on my appearance and kids saying that I was a weak link in a way, because I was small, quiet, and I kept to myself, and I didn't know how to fight back. And I think once kids sort of saw that, they thought it was fun to pick on me, you know? And it's just, it was a misery. It was, yeah, really hard time and to cope with going to school. Yeah.
And we know that kids of that age do end their lives sometimes because of bullying. You hear the odd story in the news about some 13, 14, 15-year-old kid who has died by suicide, and it is down to bullying. And that's because at that time in your life, like, life's so intense. You're starting to establish yourself and grow out of being a kid into an adult, and there's so much going on. And those emotions are so hectic, especially these days, like even more so than perhaps when you were at school. Like, the social media element of it is just out of control, and they never get a break really from each other. And then there's the bullying at school and the bullying when you go home. And were your parents aware of it, or anyone, like, did anyone know really what was, how much that was affecting you?
Yeah. So the hardest thing was, is that my parents didn't know how much I was suffering inside, I don't think, but they were aware of the bullying. And that was probably the thing that disrupted them the most, was to see that the school was, they were allowing the bullying. They knew exactly what was going on. I was documenting what was going on. The kids knew, had admitted to bullying me. They had to apologize to me. So it was really tough for them to see what their son was going through. And it wasn't until probably, you know, I was 19, 20, that they sort of found out what was going on and how much that did affect me at the time. But I find it's really hard for a 15-year-old kid to come out and say, you know, I'm not doing too well. And that's something I did struggle with, and it did lead me to really detrimental things in my future.
So you were never able to really just focus on going to school. You always had that tension there, yep. And you're always worried about who's going to be there and who's going to pick on you. And
yeah, it was the getting on the 903 bus was every single day. That hour before school was the worst time of my life. And that was because I knew what was going to happen to me. You know what I mean? And I was feared. I was feared of them and like what they were going to do, what they were going to say. It didn't matter where I went. There was someone there saying something to me. And
you had to keep going back to school so you couldn't get away.
Exactly right. It was like a trap that I couldn't leave. And it just got to a point where I would break down and I was crying before I go into school. And no one knew that, you know, how could a kid that's innocent be crying before they go to school because they're petrified of what's coming into them, you know? And these kids, they might know now watching me, but they don't know the effects that it had on me, you know, and what things that did lead to, you know? So it's really important that if kids are watching this and you are bullying someone, what effects are they actually having on that person?
And groups of young boys or young girls too, but boys perhaps in a more physical way can be really vicious at that age, that teenage age before your brain's developed. And there's very much the Lord of the Flies group mentality where there's a pecking order and putting someone else down is a great way to put myself up and everyone's just going to have a laugh and we're not really thinking about the feelings or what's happening to this person who's copping all of this. Yeah. But it can be detrimental to the point of, just a young kid thinking about wanting to end their life because they just can't get away from the abuse.
Yeah, that's it. It's just, it was a build-up and a build-up. And then, as I said, each day, it gets harder and harder for the kid, you know. He thinks, you know, when is this going to end? Is this going to end? Like, what day can I come to school and what day can I start living a normal life and not have to deal with the demons, you know, that they're battling inside.
Yeah, and so many kids would be able to relate to that.
Yeah.
When you go and speak at schools now, what do you want the students to understand?
Well, when I go and speak to them, the first thing, the whole moral of my talks is to come out and get the help, whatever that may be, if you're getting bullied, if you're getting, if you suffer from mental health, if you've got, a lot of kids are drinking young age now, age 14 and above, they're going to be drinking and experimenting with drugs. So if they are going down a dark path or whatever it is, they need to know that it is okay to put their hand up and go out and get a help from, you know, the counselor at school or the psychologist, or tell mum and dad what is actually going on, because it is really hard. Now looking back, I didn't know that these services were available when I was a young kid going through the ranks. And when I was getting bullied, you know, I turned to, you know, alcohol and substances. And I was unaware of the tools in place that could help me, you know.
What else do you say to them in terms of the bullying stuff specifically? Is that something that you cover? It's obviously been a big part of your story.
Yeah, so I run through the statistics in Australia of the bullying rate. And then there's a Kids Help, I'm pretty sure it's the Kids Help line. Yep. And I show them what they're meant to do if they are getting bullied.
Do you tell your bullying story?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. When I go through in the middle bit about my story, I do go through the year 7 to 10.
Because I'm going to say that's powerful, man. I can really feel like the impact that's had.
Yeah, I do go through that in pretty in depth as well, because they need to understand the kids. Like, the stats don't lie. There's going to be several, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of kids getting bullied, and they will be able to relate to my story, you know. So they need to know when they're going through that, not to make the same mistakes I did and bottle it up and try and breeze through it, because it doesn't work. They need to know there is help there. You know, if it's not working at school and the teachers aren't listening to you, you can still speak to a psychologist about your issues and they can help you.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you sit there and let it dwell on you, it just becomes worse and worse.
That's so good, man. I'm sure it's already helped some kids out.
And,
you know, when you give a talk like that, everyone in the school knows who those kids are, and especially those kids themselves know that.
Yeah.
And could feel totally trapped as you did. So just opening them up to some other options is such an important thing.
Yeah, exactly right. Just avenues.
When did your life spiral out of control? So bullying aside.
Yeah. So you, as I said, it wasn't exactly a specific day, you would say, but it was a build-up. So 16, I started drinking alcohol recreationally. By 17, I was smoking cigarettes, and then I had experimented with drugs when I was 17. You'd probably say by the time I was nearly 19, so 18, 8 months, I was addicted. That's probably when my life spiraled out of control for about 4 years. And that's, I revert to alcohol abuse, drug abuse, and gambling abuse. It was a bad time that I was in, and I'm extremely grateful to be here with you and sharing my story to try and help others.
So how did it all progress from the age of 18, from drinking frequently and heavily to the drugs, to the gambling? How do they all flow into each other, and what were you doing?
Well, I think a lot of it is to do, unfortunately, with the sporting clubs I was involved in. Social sport it's great if you use it in the right way, but there is a lot of alcohol abuse as substances floating around. The clubs I was involved in, they were all doing it, you know, and a young 18-year-old bloke coming through the ranks doesn't really know right from wrong, I would say. And I was around people drinking and using drugs.
And the older guys generally encouraging the younger boys to dabble in it.
It's
all a bit of a laugh.
Yep.
And, you know, if you don't do it, you're a pussy. Yep. Or if you want to be part of the team, you know, you've got to do some lines or whatever. And that's the culture. And it's all like, ha ha.
Yep.
But the problem is you don't know who you're dealing with.
Yep.
And young kids who've never touched anything before, you don't know what reaction they're going to have to that.
Right.
And you never know if someone's got a propensity for addiction, and you're dealing with extremely addictive substances, I think, with footy clubs and just in our society a lot generally these days, coke, right?
Cocaine.
Where it's looked at as, oh, you know, that's just your whatever. It's not far removed. You know, a nose beer is pretty much like having a standard beer, right?
It is.
But really you're dealing with a class A narcotic that's one of the most addictive substances on earth.
Yeah.
And so some people can just do a few lines occasionally and walk away from it, but there's plenty of people that actually can't, and you don't know who's going to have what kind of response.
Yeah.
And then sounds like you felt like a lot of guys feel where, well, if I want to play footy and be part of the team, then I've got to do the off the field stuff as well.
Yeah, no, you've nailed it on the head there. As I said, like the sporting clubs, it just, people need to realise what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, you know? And as you said, just because one person's doing a socially accepted drug, cocaine, when it shouldn't be, doesn't mean that the next person will be able to handle it. And that's exactly what happened to me, you know. No one forced it down my throat, literally, but, you know, when everyone's around it, and as you said, it's so socially accepted. You know, having a VB or a beer is as socially acceptable as just having a line, you know, and it's a disgrace.
So is that what happened with you? Was it getting on the lines and not pills? Or?
Yeah, so I used every drug. So I was using MDMA, I was using ecstasy, I was using cocaine, I was using ketamine, speed. I've used a mum and dad, sorry. I've smoked a crack pipe before. And that's the thing that it led to, you know.
So what did you actually get hooked on?
Cocaine. Yeah, I was a fiend. And like I would sniff anything because I was a drug addict, but every single weekend, sometimes during the week, by the end of it, I was using cocaine during the week. And
expensive habit.
Yeah.
In Australia especially.
Yeah, it is expensive habit, you know, but once you know, you start off with one line, and when you're an addict, you'll always find a way to get it. You know what I mean? And I was working two jobs at one time. I was earning really, really good money. And no matter whether I've earned $750 a week, I've earned $2,500 a week. It didn't matter how much money I had, I would blow it all and I'd find a way to scramble a bag of cocaine. You know, whether it'd last me a night, whether I'd get two or three. And that's what my tolerance led to. Like, if I started again now, I'd die. Because my tolerance by the end of it was up to two to three grams, you know, because I was an addict.
And how fast were you getting through that?
Depends what I was doing on the night and where I was. But once I would have a taste of it, I could not stop, and I was a fiend. So some nights I'd be going through a bag on my own, you know, and I'd be going through that in two hours, 2.5 hours, you know, depending on who I got it from, the purity of it and all that, weighing it up. But it didn't matter. I could not stop. Once I had alcohol, and, you know, I'm a drug addict. So it's just one of those things that, you know, one, alcohol, drugs, they're in hand, especially cocaine.
And how long from when you started doing lines to the point where you were hooked on it?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And that's the thing. A lot of people wouldn't even realize that they had an addiction until they sat down and actually looked at themselves in the mirror and actually saw what they were doing. Because as I said, it just started out as a social experiment, like for most people. And then from 18 to about 19, it got to a point where I could not go out and socialize without cocaine. And then, yeah, from there, it was, 19 to 23, every single weekend, sometimes during the week. And, it was like dinner for me by the end of it. So
did you end up using on weekdays?
Yeah. So that was more towards the end. Like, I never really drank during the week, but if there was something on, I wouldn't say no to it. If it was in, I would use during the week if it was there, but I wouldn't chase it during the week.
And would alcohol always precede it?
Yeah.
As soon as you have a drink, you needed to get it back.
That's it. So very rarely, I think there's maybe two or three times that I genuinely did drugs without alcohol. All the rest of it, I was drinking, and then straight away I would do drugs.
Yeah.
So it went hand in hand, and that's just how it was.
Yeah, and then you get conditioned to associate the two, and I think plenty of people would relate to that as well. And sort of touching on what I mentioned before, I think a lot of people treat cocaine very lightly.
Yeah.
And increasingly, what we can tell just by the rates of cocaine use in Australia, I think we consume more of it than just about anywhere in the world, even though it's the most expensive here than it is anywhere else in the world, and organised crime's taking full advantage of that. But just in our culture, it's a bit of a laugh. It's like, you're getting on it tonight, like, oh, having a bit of a loose one, but it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, for instance, it's not like how meth's treated.
Yeah, exactly right.
If you're smoking meth, you're fucked, basically.
Yeah,
that's how people look at it. And they're like, oh, you're a fucking junkie, right? But if you're doing some lines, everyone's like, oh, sweet, can I have some? Like, like, it's all fun and games until it's not, like someone in your situation.
Yeah. And you couldn't have nailed it on the head. And that's, so I, after about 2 years of doing what I was doing, I thought I had a problem. I thought I had a serious problem because I knew in myself what was going on in my everyday life, the mental state I was in. And when I asked a few of the people from the cricket club, I'm like, I think I've got an addiction to cocaine. And they're like, no, you don't, man. Coke's all right. As long as you're not smoking crack, you're sweet. And I'm like, hang on. If I was smoking crack Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then maybe every now and then during the week, would you say I'd have a problem? And they'll go, yes. I'm like, well, that's what's going on with cocaine. But as you said, cocaine's put under the carpet because it's socially accepted.
It's a rich people's drug.
Yeah, 100%.
And just because it's going up your nose rather than you're smoking it or you're injecting it,
we treat it
differently.
Exactly.
And I think it's got to do with the fact that, like I said, it's the rich person's drug. So therefore it's in more classier environments. And so it doesn't have that same level of stigma around it.
Yeah.
We all know that celebrities and rich people use it. And so, and politicians and all kinds of society. I mean, meth's no different, but just in the way that we look at it.
Yeah, 100%.
It's very different.
Yeah. And that's the problem that I have with people when they try and, they put this stigma on cocaine. And I'm like, mate, it's no different to smoking ice. It's no different to injected heroin. You can't have a rule for one drug and not another. They're all in the same category. They're all really detrimental to your health, your brain, the way you live your life. Don't put some sugar coat on it because you want to make yourself feel better.
And you can become horribly addicted to them.
Yeah. They're all addictive.
And how did this affect you during the week? Because I'm guessing you would have become a pretty anxious person by the end there and turns you into a wreck.
Yeah. So I still have effects from the drug use and alcohol use that I did in my previous time. And when I was going through it, if I was using Friday, Saturday, Sunday, by the time I was getting to like Saturday afternoon or Sunday, the drugs weren't really doing much. They were just weighing off and I was just using them because I had a habit, And that was the same thing when it got to, 4:30 to 10 a.m. in the morning, They don't really do much.
Yeah, you're just pumping poison into your brain, and it's really more the habit of doing it, of doing the line.
Yeah.
Than the actual effects of it.
Yeah, 100%. And you're trying to blow off the come down, if I can get more of on a high, I'm going to push back the come down.
It's not how it works.
But in reality, you're actually making your come down 10 times worse and you're just running away from something that's inevitable. And as you said, Sundays I'd be so scattered and rattled that it didn't really worry me. I'd just be in my bed. It could be a sunny 25 degree day and I'd just have my curtains down, wouldn't talk to anyone. And then Mondays when it would hit me, Monday, I'd be bet regret because, as I said, I wasn't really an alcoholic, but you'd probably say 50-50. Like, I never really fiend alcohol.
But you had a reliance on it.
Yeah, right? I had a reliance on it to get away from whatever it is that I was running away from. And then it led to the cocaine abuse, and then it led to the gambling. So Mondays you'd wake up, I'd have no money. And this was a cycle, as I said, for 4.5 years.
You can't have had money for long if you were addicted to cocaine yeah. and gambling.
Yeah, bro. I know. So, and if I did go through some stints of behaving, I would have a couple of thousand saved up, and then it'd be gone in a weekend. You
as
know
a,
what I mean?
As a reward for yeah. being so good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. If I had, you know, 2 weeks off or whatever I was doing. So no matter what, I could never be in front, you know, because it was just a domino effect, as I say. And the thoughts that I were getting, they weren't actually me, you know, because I was, because the dopamine levels, I was, were all up and down in my yep. brain. My brain had no time to repair itself or get any normal.
Well, can't balance out.
Exactly right. Yeah. So my chemical imbalance.
And then once you get used to all these frequent highs,
yeah.
and gambling does very much the same thing as cocaine.
It does.
In yeah. terms of the dopamine and even just the chase of wanting yeah. to get on and get a bag or yeah. wondering if fucking Estrella's going to run yeah. first in the bloody core field or whatever. It does a similar thing to yeah. our brain in terms of the dopamine release. Yeah. And when you're doing one on the other and you're piggybacking them constantly,
yeah.
That's not how we're supposed to function. Like, we're just monkeys. You're supposed to, you know, sit around all day, do some hunting, eat some food, go to sleep. And then so many of us are even looking at our phones as well in between, just yeah. the dopamine kick that we're constantly on this up and down and we're never balancing out.
Yeah.
And so then you get used to that. And so your brain's madly scrambling, looking for how do I get my next little high, my next little piece of junk food. And so then, yeah, you can't just like level out and walk around and just have a good time being a normal person. You need to feed it with this shit, and it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, exactly what you said. So I was unaware of that at the time. When I finally booked in to see a psychologist, one of the first things he showed me was the dopamine levels. And I didn't even know gambling, how much that affected my brain and what
yeah,
it did.
You wouldn't necessarily think that was as a thing. Bad as yeah. drugs.
Exactly right. So when he goes, you can't find any happiness or be
excited by anything.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he said. He goes, for most people, this would get them excited. But because this is what you've done, this is what you're doing, your brain will never get there with the way you're
operating. Because it's so overstimulated.
Exactly right.
It happens with blokes who watch heaps of porn as well, yeah. and then they can't get an erection
yeah.
because it's not normal, the yeah. amount of stimulus and the amount of dopamine that's yeah. being released.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then normal life
yeah.
can't excite you. Then you can't feel happy about anything. And then, hey, presto, you need the drugs, you need the gambling,
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
need the porn to be able yeah. to fucking feel anything.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So as I said, I was really unaware of that, and that was yeah, really eye-opening to see the fluctuations of what my brain was doing.
Before you got to that point, though, you sent a text message to your mate one day.
Yep.
Yeah, so yeah. What was the lead up to that actually pushed you to reach out to someone?
So me and him were in a similar sort of boat, and it was sort of a sliding doors moment. I was playing football at the same club he was at, and we sort of spoke about our mental health, and, you know, we both weren't on the same wavelength. I mean, we... in normality of life. So we're both using drugs, we're both had gambling problems, and we could relate. And I told him a bit about what was going on with me, and he goes, you need to go down and get a mental health care plan. And I said, what's that? So I was 23 at the time. I had no idea what a mental health care plan was, and he referred me to get that. So that message I sent to him saying, hey mate, I haven't done too well with what I've been going on. And he goes, have you got a mental health care plan? And I said, not yet. And that was the night. That was the night that changed my life. So to get that mental health care plan was just a necessity.
So it wasn't much the message, but it was everything.
When people see a text message saying, have you got the mental health care plan? And I said, not yet. To them, it means nothing. But to me, that was the day that changed my life, because it opened up all the avenues to getting the help.
How hard was it to send that message?
Oh, extremely hard, because us males are so proud. And we've got such an ego that we think that we have to be so dominant, I think, a lot of us, you know, and that was myself. I didn't want to admit that I had a problem. I was 23 years of age, and, you know, I was hurting so much, and I didn't tell anyone, and because I didn't want anyone to think I was weak, and I didn't want anyone, I was embarrassed of what I was doing, you know.
Which makes it so much worse.
Yeah, exactly right.
So many of us do it.
Yeah, you know, and I was just holding in this alter ego, and, you know, it got to a point where it's like, you know, I seriously need help. Otherwise, I was going to take my own life. or there was going to be other effects that were going to take place. And that's what it was to me. It was either get help or you're going to lose your life because you're going to kill yourself or the drugs were going to kill you.
And also this ego that you portray to the world, to the footy club boys and your mates, that becomes what you're known for and what you get validation for is, Gussie, he's always on the punt, you know, he does the most drugs, ha, 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 right? And then you play up to that because that's what you're used to doing. You don't want anyone to know that actually this is how you really feel inside. And that makes it into even more of a monster because you're afraid, like, well, if I'm not this guy, then what else would I be?
So
it can become just such a tricky thing, can't it? But you can also simplify it as you finally did then. And like so many people who come on this show, it's so much worse in your head, like all of it. Like it's the worst place you can possibly be, stuck in your head, you going through this, having that all those voices going round and round and round, not pulling yourself out of it, not sharing it. Things just get darker and darker and darker. And then when you finally do share it, it takes the weight off and you realize like, oh, wow, I'm putting myself through most of that.
Yeah, exactly right.
What was your experience like once you went to the doctor and how'd that go and how did you go starting to see therapist?
Yeah, so I just went to the local GP, booked in, as I said, to get the mental health care plan. And they said, what do you want it for? And I said, I've got a gambling problem. I'm drinking too much and I've got an excessive problem with using cocaine. And that was all it was from there, you know, like when I went to the GP, they're not there to be your therapist. They're there to get you to where you need to go. So that was a first step. I was so nervous going in there, you know, cause you know, I was confessing to my issues and, you know, I was trying to leave the life that I knew, that I'd only known for so long. And I was trying to better myself. And then they got me onto a psychologist back home.
And the way the doctor received that when you said that, I'm guessing they were just very professional about it, right?
Yeah, exactly right. No, there was no judgment there, which I think is a lot of it, like a lot of part of the reason why I was so closed in was from judgment as well.
But it's perceived judgment, isn't perceived it? You're judgment. Like, oh, they're going to do this. Yeah. It's not true, especially with a doctor, any doctor worth their salt, you could go in there and say any health concern that you've got and they'll go, all right, well, this is what we need to do. They're not going to go, oh, shit, mate, like, that's pretty embarrassing. Like,
Well, it's exactly what you said. It's perceived judgment. As I said, I've never gone in there and spoken to them, so I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, as you said, it's all in your head, half of it.
Well, there's also an element of the addiction itself trying to hold you back from actually getting away from it. And some people perceive their addiction as like a little demon or give it life in some way where it pretends it's your friend and that you need it. And then once you start making strides to get away from it, part of what will hold you back and those perceptions in your head is actually the grip of the addiction trying to stop you from doing something different.
Well, that's it. Well, it's one of those things I read and it goes, when you've got an addiction, you're choosing the addiction over everything else, but when you give up the addiction, you're choosing everything else over the addiction.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And once I understood that, you know, it opened my mind to various different avenues.
And you could think about it every time you're going to do it, you're like, am I going to give up everything else in my life to feed this thing that I fucking hate?
Yeah, that's it. And it was a hatred toward the end. Like I hated myself, you know, because of what the feelings were making me feel that I was choosing to do. So how does that work out? I'm choosing to do something that I hate and the way it's making me feel.
And you just keep repeating it.
Even though
you know you don't want to. So you got that cognitive dissonance because you know logically I can't keep doing this. I hate this. But you just keep getting dragged back into it.
Yeah.
And that makes you hate yourself.
Yeah, it's a vortex, you know, and that's what I, you know, call chasing the dragon.
Yeah.
You can't win, man. You know, that's why I try and tell my mates and people to come and speak to me for help and this and that. And like, you can't win. There's no such thing as a dragon, man. You know, you going down there and, you know, getting high as a kite for what? You know, the higher you get, the harder you're going to fall down. You know, that's what people, they need to understand what that then leads to.
And after a very short time, you're only doing drugs to try and feel normal anyway. You're not getting high anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You've nailed it on the head. I wasn't even getting high. Like, even when I was...
All you're doing is adjusting your baseline where you were before you started doing drugs and how you felt and the normal amount of happy chemicals you had. All you're doing is making that unattainably high and then trying to get back up to it when the whole time you could have just not done drugs and you would have felt the same as someone who does drugs every day.
Exactly right. So as I said, the people I was hanging around normalized it as well. It's a normal part of society now, you know, and that's what, you know, a bloke that's gone through it and luckily come out the other side to some extent, you know, like I'm 20 months clean off it all now. And just
well
trying
done, man.
Yeah, it's been
no small feat.
It's been an absolute roller coaster and a journey.
When you actually find out who you are for the first time too.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, and legit, like, yeah. You, because since you were 18 when you're just a kid,
yeah,
you've been fucked up.
Yeah, exactly right. I didn't give myself a chance to know who I was as a person or to try and see what I actually wanted to do in life. You know what I mean? When you're doing what I was doing for so long, how can you find out who you are? You know, how can you sit there in the mirror and go, I want to do this, I want to do that?
You can't, because it takes over your life.
Like, exactly,
you
say, right.
You give up everything else just to feed that thing. And that means you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
As long as that's in your life,
that's
just going to rule your day. And then to a greater and greater extent, till you're on the street and you've got nothing and no one.
Exactly right. And that's the path I was going down. And people would justify that I wasn't, because they were doing it as well.
Because they might have an issue themselves.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I had to sort of take myself away from, is to say, you know, just because they're saying that doesn't mean it's right. I know I've got a problem.
There's also plenty of people out there who don't do cocaine every weekend.
Yeah, exactly right.
Who would say, that is a problem.
And that's the thing. So, like, all I'd known for so long was the people I was hanging around, and I thought it was normal because they were doing it.
Yeah.
It wasn't until
then you think, oh, everyone's doing it.
Exactly
it's
right.
Like, well, everyone is 17 people, mate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought because everyone at my career club was doing it and the people I associated with, that everyone was doing it and it was normal.
And but you're in this bubble and you think that's the world.
Yeah, 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 exactly right. And then it wasn't until I got to, 23, and I started to talk to, you'd say, more professional people, and to say, that's not normal, mate. And I was like, what do you mean it's not normal? I said, I know everyone. I said, I go out. All my mates are doing it. I go around to strangers' house. We're all on the drugs, you know? And then, as I said, when I took myself out of that bubble, and I'm like,
oh,
it's actually not normal what you're doing, you know? And it's not lasting.
And it's not serving you.
Yeah, exactly right. So, yeah, one of my mates who lives in Bendigo now, he was a massive advocate for me to take a look of really who you are and what's going on, mate, you know? If it wasn't for him, and as I said, my footy mate who sent me that message, those two people are probably still stuck in that, you know, drug-fueled world.
You've been sober for nearly 2 years now, but that's after a bunch of relapses.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right.
So talk about getting sober that first time and then relapsing that first time.
Yeah, so four times I tried to get clean on my own, you'd say. Well, I did, yeah. So I tried to not get professional help because I was embarrassed and ashamed. And then I'd go 2 or 3 months. It was no longer than 3 months. I couldn't go longer than 3 months. I'd, for whatever reason, it'd be in between the 2 to 3 months. And then I'd go, you know.
And what would you be like when you were sober then?
It's important to look after our mental health just like our physical health. And AG1 is the perfect supplement to help take care of both. Just one daily scoop of AG1 covers all your nutritional bases with 75 vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, adaptogens, a greens blend, and whole food ingredients. You can count on this tasty mix to boost your energy, increase mental clarity, help you get better sleep, improve digestion, and pep up your immune system. Plus, it's super simple to make part of your morning routine, all for the price of a coffee. You may know producing this podcast is all volunteer, and I have to pay for studio time and editing to keep bringing you these episodes. Every dollar we make from this partnership will go towards helping to cover production costs. So it's an awesome way to support your health and contribute to young men's mental health all in one. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, AG1 is giving you a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/youngblood. That's drinkag1.com/youngblood. Check it out.
I didn't know what sober Angus was.
Like, at ease with yourself.
Yeah, I didn't know how to fit in society sober. Now I'm all good. Like, I can go to doofs, I can go to dance, I dance at nightclubs. But at that time, I didn't
know. So did it feel like, well, without this drug, I've got nothing?
That's exactly right. I didn't know.
Therefore, I need it.
Yep, that's what it was. It was a reliant, because I'm like, if I don't have the cocaine or the alcohol, what am I doing here? You know what I mean? That's how I felt. And as I said, it got to 3 months and I'd be like, oh, you know, I've worked hard, you know, 3 months is all good. You know, I'll try and have a drink. I'll have a drink. And then every time I drink, you know, I'd start straight. And my goal was not to do drugs. I really didn't want to do drugs because I knew cocaine I was addicted to. So I was like, I'll just have a beer and I won't do drugs. Never, ever worked. I could not drink and not do cocaine.
And what kind of a run would you go on once you open the floodgates again?
Oh, that was the thing. I thought I could hold it, and I'd be like, you know, all right, I've got on it. You know, let's go on a break again. As soon as I opened the floodgates, it'd be 4 or 5 months again, you know, straight back on the same cycle. So and then I'd come off it and I'd be like, all right, let's go again. So from when I was like, you know, I tried 20, when I ran away from COS, maybe 21 and a half to 23. So two and a half to 3 years of on and off trying to start something and then relapsing. I did that 4 times. And then the 5th time, you know, I went and saw a drug and alcohol counselor when I was living in Coffs Harbour. That was the first time I seek professional help. And after 3 months of speaking to him and this and that, I thought I was okay again. And then I relapsed. And then, so four times on my own, first time giving a professional help, failed every time. The 6th time, which was another 7 months after seeing the first psychologist or the drug and alcohol counselor, that was the time that finally clicked. So 6 times.
So you fit a lot in a young life, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, 23, and I'm 25 now, but at that time, 23 and a half, the 29th of January, 2022 was the day that it finally clicked, you know.
And what was different about that time?
There was one phrase. So that was the first time the second time that I reached out for proper help. So I saw a psychologist. He then referred me. I was still seeing him. I went to a Narcotics Anonymous, a few meetings of them. And then I landed at the drug and alcohol worker in Headspace. And I saw him, and there was just one phrase that he said to me, you know. I said to him, you know, I'm a good bloke. I believe I'm a good bloke. You know, I still go to the gym. I still work a good job. I'm still holding a job. But, you know, I can't think of anything better on Fridays to Sundays just to smash alcohol, drugs, and gamble all my money. And he looked at me and he goes, Angus, anyone can find a reason to use drugs and alcohol, but what's your reason not to use? That's what he said to me. And it was like the spark just went off in my head. And I was like, that was the next phase of my life. Because he explained to me, if I do choose to drink, what does that lead to? And I never thought of my actions. What's the next step? The fast forward play. If I do choose to drink alcohol, I'm going to do drugs. If I choose to do drugs, my gambling's going to get set off. So are you prepared to face those consequences? And my answer is no now, because I don't want to feel like that. I don't want to have blood noses during the week. I don't want to be coughing up blood when I wake up from all the drugs. That's what was happening, you know, all these other things that were going on. So I think I still have those urges, but I think now if you do that, what's it going to lead to? That's the ultimate thing now. What are the decisions?
So what is your reason not to drink?
My reason not to drink is because I want to live a life. I want to see the potential that I know I have as a human being, you know? And this whole journey, it's been, if you're struggling from addictions, you've got to want to do it for yourself, you know? Anyone can tap you on the shoulder and say, you know, you've got to change, but you've got to want to change, you know? And I really did want to change. And it got to a point where it was life or death for me. And a lot of people don't know that. And it'll be the first time they see that. My parents probably find it really hard to see their son saying, you know, it was life or death. Because the substance abuse was getting to a tolerance where my body was going to shut down. It had to, you know, and not sleeping for that many days. And all the other psychological things that come with it. So it got to a point, it's either give it a go or you're going to die. So my reason now is to live a better life and to show people now you can change. You can live a better life if you're going through addictions, mental health. You know, there is a bloke out there, and I'm one of many, just like yourself, you know, showing these people life can be better. You know, with hard work, it's a fucking roller coaster. You know, it is a roller coaster. I'm not telling you it's been easy. There's been days where I wanted to quit. There's been days where I cried. There's been days where I thought I was going to relapse. There's been days where I've, you know, gone to the gym and just let all the anger out, but I'm here, I'm alive, and I'm showing the people the ways of how to live a better life with addictions and mental health.
Wow, goosebumps, man.
Yeah, that's it. I want to inspire people, and
yeah,
people like you inspire me. You know, coming on here today is, you know, I'm extremely grateful. There's things in my life now that teach me appreciation, you know, teach me to be a better human. And I'm forever grateful for people like yourself to show me, you know, because we can all help each other and we can all inspire each other. And that's what it is all about, this mental health. Coming on here, me showing you my story, me listening to you, showing people, we, you know, as a society, mental health should be a team game, you know, and what you're doing and what I'm doing is, it's something that, you know, I just will get lost for words speaking about it. So,
mate, you are what this show is all about, and everyone should hear what you just said, especially anyone who feels like they're at the bottom and there's nowhere else to go, or anyone who's dabbling with stuff and thinks that, you know, it's all fine, everyone does it. Mate, listen to that couple of minutes where you just went off, because yeah, that was special and just perfectly well said.
Yeah, thank you.
And it is so good to see you here as a confident, collected, articulate, passionate young man with fire in his eyes, talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
When, you know, not too long ago, you were a down and out junkie, man.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what it was, you know, and I was that person. And that's what I say.
You don't have to stay that person, though.
Exactly right.
And you think you do at the time.
Yeah. You think, as I said, people want to take their own lives. People, you know, think they've hit rock bottom in their world. You know, I've been there. I have been there. I've been on that platform. Trust me, I can relate to you there. Everyone's story is different. You know, everyone's journey is different, but being at rock bottom, I've been there. I've thought there was no hope. I've thought of taking my own life. I've thought of never being on planet Earth again. But, you know, I reached out, I got the help, and now I am living proof to people what can be done, you know, and that's what I want to keep inspiring people to do. And I'm not ashamed of what I've done, not at all. You know, a lot of people, at the time I was, I'm not proud of what I've done, but into a certain context, I wouldn't take back what I've done. Because now I can speak from the heart and I can say, I was there, but now look where I am. Why can't you? I'm a human being. I've got two arms. I've got two legs just like you, who's battling, but with hard work on myself and the you know, the will to learn from others, you've got to be open-minded as well. Like, there's no way I would have done some of the things that I would have done now, like meditation, appreciation of life, volunteering, or like, I never would have done any of that 2 years ago. But I opened my brain, I let people come in and help me, and then I got bits and pieces from other people, made my own criteria to benefit myself in the life, and sticking to it's really important. And I just, you know, my dark days are still there, but my better ones are going to be the ones that make me get through it, you know. So,
man, I'm so glad you're talking to kids.
Yeah, that's,
they should hear that.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know. It is hard to talk about sometimes, you know, to the kids, but they're at that age, you know, where it just went so wrong for me, you know, and if they can see.
It cuts through hearing you talk about it.
Yeah.
You'd be able to hear a pin drop, people would listen to what you're saying. And unfortunately, often we have to go and make the mistake ourselves to learn from it, but not always. And sometimes if you listen to someone and they're talking like you're talking now, that can be enough to ring in their mind when it comes up, and I'm sure it will make the difference to some people.
Yeah, exactly what you said. So I'm not saying with the talks I do to schools and stuff, I'm not saying that I can change every person there. I know that's not the case, but I never had anyone come and speak to me. All I'm saying that is if a 25-year-old bloke with a similar story to me had come and spoken to me and opened my eyes to what alcohol, drugs, that lifestyle does, there might have been a chance that I wouldn't have done it. There's a chance that I might have listened to him. And that's the way I look at it when I go in that. You know, if I can help one person or save one kid or anyone at all, then that's my mission done, you know, and I've given them a chance to learn from me.
You can't take back the past, but at least you can do something with it.
Yeah, exactly right.
Help other people, you know, if you're called to do that, which you are, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't give you enough props for doing that. So how long did it take you to start feeling good about yourself?
Yeah, it's good question again. Look, from detoxing and all that, I reckon it probably took me 6 months to sort of feel human again. And it's different for everyone. Like, I've spoken to a few addicts and some people reckon that 3 months, and I was like, 3 months, you know, if that's for you, that's great, you know. But to fully cleanse your body out and release everything that's going on in there and to get back to some sort of, you know, structure and process. And for me to start thinking on a day-to-day basis and not having, you know, the suicidal thoughts, thinking that I was worthless and actually feeling good about myself six to seven months-ish.
And then what about 6 months versus 12 months?
Yeah, massive change. So for me, 6 months was sort of learning the ropes of coming out of that phase, you'd say, and then sort of transitioning into the new me. And then, you know, 12 months being sober was just, it felt one of the best days of my life. The weight I fell on that day, looking back to where I was, it was like, whoa, you know, I have come that far. Like, and to think where I was in those bad days, it doesn't feel real, you know? So the transition, it slowly happens, and people need to know that it is a process. And you need to, one of the things I said to my counselor when I got in there, day one, I said, I just want to get to 12 months clean. And he goes, no, you don't. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he goes, you need to get through every single day to get to that 12 months. You know, people just think that, oh, I'm going to quit. My life should be better. Well, it doesn't happen like that. You know, you need to be real with yourself and the struggles you've you're having and be accepting of it, because it's been a roller coaster. Yeah, that's what I say to people. And just wake up and I'm not an addict.
You got to win every day.
Exactly right. You know, you got to push yourself each day on the bad days. And that's what people need to realize. There are bad days and it is okay to have bad days. You know, not every day is going to be, you know, sunshine. You're not going to be feeling amazing every day. But, you know, if you implement things like getting a structure in your life and doing things, so when those bad days happens, you've got your structure, you still go to your gym, you still do your meditation, it'll make the next day better for you, you know? So there's always light and avenues to keep helping yourself. You're never stuck in that bad place.
Where do you go in your mind on those bad days now?
So on the bad days, the reason why I live such a methodical approach on my life is to keep myself away from those bad days as much as possible. So when if I'm thinking bad thoughts and there's negativity, I'll breathe. I'll stop and I'll just inhale, exhale, try and bring myself to complete calmness. It's just especially when I'm anxious. I suffer from anxiety. I'm sure I suffered from it beforehand, and I'm a lot worse now from all the substances I used. So breathing is a massive thing. Meditation and going
and then diet, sleep, exercise.
Yeah, massive, massive. Like, people underestimate how much all that plays a part, you know. People hear all these things. Oh, eat well, sleep well, go to the gym, go for a run, do this. But no one does it. No, very few people actually do it and do it well. If you do it well and you structure it, I guarantee you will live a more fulfilling life.
Well, then you level out.
Yeah.
And then you're going for a walk and just looking at the trees makes you smile.
Oh,
right? So you don't have to chase some mega, mega high, because you're actually the way you're supposed to be, where like the simple things can make you feel good.
One of the best things I like to do, and the thing that gives me the greatest joy and fulfillment, is sitting there and looking at the water, whether it's a lookout or over the beach. I live on the coast, so I'm not far from the beach, just going somewhere that I can take myself to, sit there. If I want to whip out my laptop and do some stuff on the Lost and Found, or I just sit there and just looking at the water and just appreciating the gift of life. That's how simple it is now, and I cherish it. And how could a bloke that was chasing all the dragons and all that things just sit there on earth and just enjoy it, you know?
And if someone had told you that before you went down that road, you would have laughed at them.
Yeah, imagine, if someone told me, oh, you're just going to sit there and look at the water and you're going to love that. But that's peace, you know? That's beautiful nature and something that, I can't describe to people, you know?
And what's it like for you now to be able to look in the mirror and respect that man in the mirror?
Yeah, it feels... I get goosebumps, you know, to look at myself in the mirror, and I cry sometimes, you know. I cry when I write. I got my journal. When I look at myself in the mirror and I cry, because it doesn't sometimes feel real that I got to this place, you know.
This is who you should be.
Exactly. And that's what it is. This is the man I want to be, and I want to keep being better. I want to keep being better for the community. You know, I'm massive on helping others, and just like yourself, showing other people's just ways and experiences.
So tell us about Lost and Found Project.
So the Lost and Found Project is something that I started 6 months ago. It's a mental health talk that I'm hoping to go around and speak to as many sporting clubs, schools, business organisations, anything at all, and talk about mental health. So it's a 25 to 30 minute presentation just about the statistics.
Man, I reckon it should be 2 hours, bro. People will listen.
Gotta keep those. Yeah, that's it. The kids sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes they fall asleep on their bags.
It's like, am I helping you? Yeah. But the one over there, I'm like, I know I helped you. Yeah. So that's what makes it all worthwhile. But yeah, it's a 30 minute mental health talk and just principles that I use in my everyday life. I tell them about my story, the MGAR principles. So meditation, goal setting, active lifestyle, appreciation, and healthy eating, and how I implement them in my everyday life and how much that has helped me get to where I am. And then I just show them, you know, that there is hope. So, and the main thing is showing the kids and especially the males, hey, it is okay to be vulnerable. Come out and get the help because it ain't wait to speak.
And people can follow that on Instagram, can't they?
Yeah, the Lost and Found Project 23. So if anyone wants one, as I said, I just want to help as many people as possible. That's all it is, just passion at the moment. And yeah. Done three talks, two at one at a high school, one at a junior soccer club, and one senior sporting club, and had really good feedback. And you know that we are helping and changing people for the better.
First of many, I reckon. Every club and school should get you out.
Yeah, well,
to talk like this.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, my story's no more important than yours or anyone else that I speak to. It's no more important, and I want to make that clear. But people can learn from me. You know, and my mistakes and the journey I've gone on. And that's what it's all about, giving back to the society so some people in there don't have to fall in that trap.
So. Now, there is one part of your story that I think is really interesting that is important as well, the fact that you're still in these environments, yep. man. So you're still playing footy. Yep. You're actually in Adelaide today on a footy trip.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe it, eh?
Where all the boys are getting on the piss and yep. there's some drugs around yep. and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
And you can actually be in those environments now.
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
Yeah, so that is one of the most questions that I get every time I go out. And I try not to tell my story to random people because it's just
talking their ear off, mate. Yeah, I didn't ask you life story.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm like, look, I don't drink because of this, that and the other. But all my mates and everyone that knows me, that is the most fascinating question I get. How can you go out as an addict, be in that environment and not do it? And it took me some time. As I said, when I got off the straight and narrow, I went away from everyone for about 5 months. I didn't talk to anyone. Anyone that did talk to me, I was really close. I was really, cautious in the approach I took because I didn't want to fall back in that trap, and I know how easy it is. So the thing was, how was I going to come back into society, still see my friends, and not relapse? Because all my friends, shouldn't say all, but majority of my friends do use drugs. They do drink and they gamble. And that was the thing that is obviously, I'm putting myself in a situation to relapse every weekend. I play sport, and I wasn't going to throw away my friends. Like, a lot of people were telling me, find new friends. I've known these people since I was born.
And they do those things, but there's more to them and your relationship than just those things.
Yeah, right? Exactly right. So for some people, it wasn't though. Some people, I was a drug person who they could scab off.
Yeah.
You know,
so and those relationships end.
Gone. Don't come back to me. And that's fine. You know, I knew a lot of those. When you're in the game, you know, that's what people lurch off you for.
You're probably doing it to other people too.
Yeah. Exactly right. So it is what it is with them. But my true mates, you know, just because, you know, they're using drugs, it doesn't mean they're bad people. They're just making bad decisions. And I still stand by that. You know, my friends are all making poor decisions now. You know, they're using drugs. Some of them, they're drinking excessive amounts. Some of them can do it recreationally. Does that make it right? I'll leave that.
But like you said, it's up to us. It's up to every individual to be able to realise when you do or don't have a problem.
Yeah, and exactly right.
You can't be a born again, holier than thou preacher because that's just going to piss people off and they're not going to listen anyway.
Yeah, exactly right. And I don't ever preach what I do.
So you just live by example and then if people want to come to you, they do, and I'm sure they are.
Exactly right. I will never ever preach what I do on anyone else because I can't drink six beers, doesn't mean you can't. Like, why should you not be able to have six beers if you enjoy it? You know, if you can, you know, recreationally use drugs and that's the way you want to do it, like, that's fine if that's the way you want to live your life.
It's about knowing yourself and knowing when you're going over the edge.
Yeah, exactly right. So, you know, going out and putting myself in that environment, it is tricky at times. Like at the start, when I was trying to wheeze my way back into society, when I was going to the sporting clubs and, you know, a few parties and this and that, if I felt like I was really going to use, I'll just get in my car and leave. I wouldn't even say goodbye. Where's Gus gone? I'm going home. Because I knew if I stayed there for any longer, and I'll do it. So take yourself out of that environment.
But that feeling's lessened over time?
Yeah, definitely. I still have urges. Like even last week we had the footy presentation night. Mm. And it's times like on the footy trip or special occasions, you'd say, that they're the ones that I'm like, oh, I want to do it. I'm an addict.
Yeah, and that little voice that's always tricked you says, oh, you know, you can do it just this time.
Yeah, exactly right.
You fucking proved six other times.
Right. So they're the times, like, I've gotten over the fact of doing it every weekend. Like, those don't really hurt me. Like, I can go down to the pub with the boys now, you know, watch the footy, have a meal, and I can go home on a Saturday night. That doesn't worry me really anymore. It's the special occasions, you know. It's my mate's birthday. It's the footy trips. It's the presentation nights when all your mates come round. They come round to our house. Everyone's drinking.
So you're on a footy trip right now. How are you staying sober?
When
you get that urge, when you get that craving, what are you doing with it?
I think of the consequences. That is seriously how I do it. As I said, if there was any, I haven't had to leave the situation for over a year now because I feel like I'm not conditioned to anything, but I know I can be in that environment and not do it. But when I think of myself, like when the beer's there, or, you know, there's a hot girl, you know, talking to me, or I'm trying to talk to them or whatever it may be, and they're drinking, and sometimes, you know, you're trying to fit in, oh, you know, she's doing it, I want to fit in with her. I think, oh, you know, this is not who I am. This is who I was. If I do choose to do that, what are the effects of it? And what are you going to lose? I'm going to lose a lot now.
And it just comes down to knowing yourself and then having the confidence to be yourself no matter what.
100%.
And also, that's cool. That's the definition of cool anyway. Yeah. So, like, if you're trying to impress a girl or you're trying to be a good person to be around, the way to do that is to be yourself.
Yeah, exactly right. And that was probably one of the things that I did struggle with. Like, when I was first going sober, I was like, how am I going to drink? How am I going to fit in society without using drugs and that? Because everyone's doing it. But as you said, like, I have way more people like respect who I am as a person and what I'm doing because I am sober and I'm doing it for me. Yeah, and I'm doing it for myself and I'm an authentic person, always have been and always will be. And I'm not gonna have a drink or do drugs for some person I don't even know. Like, so yeah, it's a tricky situation that, you know, sometimes, you know, I do get the urges, but yeah. Got to think real hard of.
I just think that's important to talk about and interesting to hear about because, like you said, you don't want to lose your friends. You don't want to be someone who's, oh, well, I just sit at home now and play video games by myself. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
I do it sometimes. But, that life does go on after and there is a way to still maintain those friendships and be in those environments without meaning that you're going to start using again.
Yeah.
And so, you're a good example of that.
As I said, there's nothing wrong with drinking at all, you know, if you can handle it. But I want people to know that you still can have fun without drugs and alcohol. I still go out to the nightclubs. I still go out to the pubs. I love dancing, absolutely love going to the Doofs. I go there, you know, I've been out to nightclubs on my own as a testament just to myself to see what I do, you know. I've been to nightclubs sober on my own dancing, you know, just to.
Yeah, me too. No one believes you sober.
Yeah, no one. Like, what are you on, man? Like,
yeah.
I go out some nights, like to the Doofs and stuff, and I'm having that much fun that people think that I'm on drugs and.
Yeah.
In a way, I'm like, yes, because I'm like, that's how far I've come. And, you know, to think that I'm having a sober person can have that much fun, people don't think it's real.
And then you don't have to have the come down either.
That's it. All the boys tomorrow will be, you know, oh, this, that, the other. We've got the races. I'll be up, rise and shine, doing my meditation, going for a walk, clearing my head, and, just enjoying life, man.
So, Gus, what would you say to someone who thinks that they're too far gone?
That you're not. If you really do want to change, if you really, really do want to change, there is hope. There is a life that you can live, but you've got to be willing to put in the work. As I said, a lot of people have spoken to me and come to me and they try things for a week. They say, you know, I tried meditating for a week, this and that. You've got to try for sustained periods of time, you know? And it, as I said,
but keep showing up.
You got to keep fighting the fight, man.
Yeah, and you're not going to feel motivated and you're not going to want to. And it's going to be days where you're like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And you just got to find a way to do it. And it doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah. You just got to get there.
You just got to stay on that track.
Man, I wake up at 4:50 in the morning every single day or 5 a.m., depending if I'm going to the gym or the beach. When that alarm clock goes off, I'm like every other human, man. I'm like, oh, I do not want to go down to the beach in the freezing cold when it's 7 degrees. But I know I'm going to do it, whether it's for 10 minutes or 15 minutes. I'm getting in that water because I'm going to prove to myself that I can do it. You know, I'm going to prove to myself why I'm doing it so I can get through those bad days. You just got to keep showing up, keep fighting the fight, as I always say. We've all got issues, you know, and that's okay, but we've got to learn how to live with them and the things we can do to manage them. So just you got to never give up, man. And that's the thing, resilience. The Resilience Project, reading that book and just some of the things that he speaks about. And, you know, us as humans, we've got so much to give, but you just got to find it, be willing to find it yourself. So, yeah, it's a journey, it's a mission, but you just got to never, ever give up. Keep fighting the fight.
Mate, keep going.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure.
That's it for this episode. If you like what we're all about, support us by following Youngblood Men's Mental Health on Instagram and Youngblood Mental Health on TikTok. Every podcast episode is recorded in professional quality video and they're all up on our Youngblood Men's Mental Health YouTube channel. So please show some love and subscribe. Thanks to our local business supporters, Herd Financial. You can find everything there is to know about the podcast at youngbloodmensmentalhealth.com. And most importantly, please share these stories with anyone in your life who needs to know they're not alone. We're all in this together. Catch you next time.